treaties of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay! Oh, yay! Before refrigeration and frozen food, the East End Farmers Market was here. Before packaged and processed food, the East End Farmers Market was here. Before herbicides and pesticides, the East End Farmers Market was here. The 1789 Charter for East End states, it shall and may be lawful for the burgesses and their successors to have and to keep within the said borough two markets in each week. That is to say, one market on Wednesday and one market on Saturday in every week of the year forever in the great square of the said borough. The Wednesday market in the 262nd year of a farmer's market in the great square of the said borough is now officially open.
And the voice you've just heard was that of David Rose, believe it or not, a town crier in the 21st century. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm John Pierce, your host today. And we have two criers with us, David Rose, as I mentioned, and Bill Joseph. So let's get into a little bit of their background before we start talking about town criers. David was born in Brooklyn and has lived for 30 years in Easton, PA, with his wife, Kimberly. And David, she is active at the Siegel Museum.
Correct.
We have they have a son, Gabriel, who lives with his family in Easton, Maryland. So you folks just insist on living in Easton.
His tag on his email is Estonian.
David is a graduate of William Tennant High School in Warminster, Bucks County. He attended Bucks County Community College and graduated from Florida State University with a degree in criminology. Interesting. So you are a Florida State
Seminole.
Seminole, correct. Yes. He worked in the field of corrections at the county and state level for over 30 years and is retired from the New Jersey Department of Corrections, has a master's degree in public administration from East Stroudsburg University, and currently works with disciplinary referrals at a local vocational technical school. David has been the town crier for Easton, PA, since appointed by the mayor, that's Mayor Panto,
correct,
in January of 2012. He currently serves as director of the American Guild of Town Criers. So, David, welcome.
Thank you.
And Bill Joseph is our other crier, and we're going to hear him do his cry at the end of our program. Bill was born in New Brunswick. One of four children, currently lives with Alma, his wife of 44 years. Congratulations,
44
Bill.
Years with the same woman.
Does it seem like 88 or does it really seem like 44 years?
No, it's 44 years married, 22 years outside a lady's dressing room door when she's trying on dresses.
And you live in Belvedere.
Yes.
Belvedere has one of the most striking town squares that I've ever seen.
Yes.
Love it.
Yeah, surrounded by the painted ladies.
Mm-hmm. And with multiple trees in there.
Yes.
Just a beautiful spot. So Bill graduated from Edison Township High School. That means ETHS.
Yes.
You and I have something in common.
We do.
I graduated from Evanston Township High School in Illinois, and we claim that we are ETHS.
Well, ours is actually EHS, Edison High School. So, but even though it's Edison Township.
All right, then I can stop quarreling about that, right?
Right.
So, And Bill joined the Marine Corps a month after graduating from high school.
Yes.
Enlisted for 4 years, worked as a helicopter mechanic. After military service, worked as a deluxe check printers for 25 years. Retired from there in 1995. For the next 15 years, worked for Meals on Wheels in Morris County, New Jersey, and currently drives a school van for a New Jersey school district. Bill has been a town crier for 22 years. He's the town crier for towns of Newton and Belvedere, and also Morris and Sussex County in New Jersey. On call as town crier for the National Archives in Washington, D.C. for their reading of the Declaration of Independence on July 4th. Have you done that reading several times in Washington?
Yes. Yeah, it's thrilling. You know, an audience of about 50,000 people.
Wow.
Listening to my OEAs.
Wow. He's been voted by the original Munchkins. Are we talking Wizard of Oz here?
Yes.
As the honorary mayor of Munchkinland. Tell us about that, Bill.
Well, my wife and I went out in 1999 and 2000 to help with the festival of the Wizard of Oz. And we were lucky enough to meet 9 of the original Munchkins. Now, that's 14 years ago, so chances are they're all gone now. But I dressed in a 1890s tuxedo and top hat and tails, and because I'm just as tall as a Munchkin, they took a liking to me and voted me as their honorary mayor of Munchkinland.
Yes, I think I did hear that the last of the Munchkins died a year or two ago.
Yeah.
Well,
great
that
people.
Is, what an interesting way to meet Munchkins, how to be a town crier.
Yes.
And did you get to do some cries for them?
Yes. We had a competition, and there was 17, 18 criers there, and we had chances between the competitive cries to meet with the Munchkins. I met the coroner. I met the flower ladies and the lollipop guild.
These were the actors in the movie.
The actual people that did the movies. And then at a dinner, I read a cry that I have in my repertoire, and it's a hugging cry, and the last line, "Hug a Munchkin today," and they all gathered around me and hugged me, and that's when they made the announcement that I was now the honorary mayor of Munchkinland.
Oh, you felt as if you were in the movie, didn't you?
Yeah, I was about a foot off the ground when they said that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. David, Bill mentions competitive cries. Explain to us about that.
Well, one of the things that we do as town criers is gather together and compete. It's not just a competition. It's obviously a chance for us to just exchange stories and to have a good time and to have dinner and to get dressed up and compare outfits and stuff like that. But the serious part is the competition. And there are judges in these competitions who evaluate various aspects of a cry. And it's broken down into clarity, volume, sustained. You're also judged on the content of your cry, how well you perform that. And those are the competitions then that we go to get a ranking. And both of us are privileged to know some of the people who are number one and number two and number three in the world, because there are international competitions which are open up to town criers from around the world also.
Now, how often would you go to such competitions?
As often as you could get in your car or fly and get there.
You mean they're that frequent?
The international and the world happen. The world is every 4 years. The internationals could be every 2 years. Then we have the North American, which includes Canada, Mexico, United States, and we gather to do those.
Do they have town criers in Mexico crying in Spanish?
We haven't had one yet, but I know that there are criers back there, but they are not organized into a guild. If I may, a town crier delivers the news or is an advertising gimmick for the town. And there are countries all over the world that have town criers that are not part of a guild. Right now, there are town criers in Iraq, Afghanistan, Japan, Fiji Islands, and literally all over the world. But because they're not part of a guild, they don't become part of the world competitions.
Are you saying that in those countries, the town criers are actually doing the work that we think of as our 17th, 18th centuries in this country?
Even today, I've had the opportunity to do the news as a actual town crier. And if I can elaborate, okay. We had a hurricane that happened before Sandy, Hurricane Harry, where there was flooding all over, and people were evacuated from the homes. And the local ShopRite and Pathmark took the people in, clothed them in the white gowns that they used for the butcher shops, and gave them the food right out of the delis and everything. But they had to find out what was going on in their town. And they gave it to me, and I went to the ShopRite and to the AMP and to the churches that are in town and announced when FEMA was going to be coming in. And I did it as a town crier. So it was the first time in my 20-some years to be able to deliver the news as a town crier. But most of it is doing resolutions and proclamations for the town, performing weddings and funerals, and so forth.
Now, the town crier served an important purpose at one time, which was to deliver the news, announce things like sheriff sales, announce things like missing children, to give be the person who delivered the news that couldn't wait until the newspaper came out. Announce in England, there was a history of town criers being the ones who read the royal proclamations. When the queen or the king made a proclamation, it would be distributed and somebody had to read it to the population. In England, a lot of the time at that time, the population couldn't read, so they needed somebody who could read. The town crier was the representative of the king, and that's one of the places where we get the idea you don't shoot the messenger, because if you do, you're actually assaulting the representative of the king, and there were laws against that. In America, it was a little bit different, but the town crier did at one time serve a very important purpose, regardless, both here and in England and in other countries. Right now, most of the things that the town criers are used for is to promote tourism. They are representatives of their town. They're used to create a little bit of flair, a little bit of historical drama for things that happen in the town, be they public events, like I was doing the town cry for the opening of the farmers market. I'm very fortunate to live in Easton, which has the oldest farmers market in the United States, established 1752. So appearing as a town crier would be very appropriate there. Though it is something to kind of promote the idea of your area being a place that's interesting, has a historical part to it, and is a place people should come and visit.
And when the farmers market in Easton opens every year, are you there to cry for
right.
that?
You had asked about competitions. Most competitions, whether they be just a gathering or the world competition, is centered around a theme. For instance, in 2004, I ran the North American competition, and it was centered at the center of Newton, and it was done on Newton Day. Most competitions have a theme, and that theme could be the reading of the Declaration of Independence, and the list goes on. But at that competition, there's three cries that have to be written and read by the criers. And one is an introduction of where you're coming from and why it would be good to come and visit. So you still write the cry about Landing, New Jersey, or Easton, Pennsylvania, and why it's good to go there.
Is there a rule in the guild that the crier must write his own material in the case of telling where he's from? Or
go ahead. No,
if I recall, one of the bylaws has that it's not necessary. People can actually, and one of the things, actually, this is kind of interesting because I was at a competition where the crier was reading a cry, which actually was the result of a competition in their own country. Mm-hmm. They actually broadcast on the radio that they were going, and people submitted cries then as part of the competition to get their cry being the one read. That in this case, it was actually for the person from New Zealand who did that.
most criers, David and myself, will read our own material because, as Dave puts it, he has his way of speaking and his
phrasing.
And at the end, you've written something that you think that is good for the theme of what's going on. And now it's up to you to read your own writing. So, yeah.
Yes. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and I'm chatting this evening with David Rose and Bill Joseph. They are town criers, believe it or not, in the 21st century. And we're talking about this whole activity, which I would say, David and Bill, used to be the way a lot of people got their news. You mentioned illiteracy being very high in the past. And so they would gather in the town square and hear a proclamation, maybe by the king or a prince or someone in authority. And so it was really important in those days. Now it's, I would say, folkloric. Is that a way to describe it?
I would think so. Although, like you have the daily news or the newspaper that you're used to seeing, the banner across the top tells you the name, or the name of your radio station is put out there. The town crier dresses in his garb, and he rings his bell. And he is of a stature that you're recognizing. At noon, he rings his bell and draws attention with three Oyes, Anglo-Saxon for come here and listen. Okay?
The town crier is not completely folkloric. There are still town criers who open court sessions. Yeah. My wife, interestingly enough, her grandfather was the court crier for Lehigh County, and he was the one responsible for opening the court sessions with the same words that we use as town criers throughout history, oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. So there still are town criers, court criers, actually, who practice the tradition of being the formal, providing the formal part of an opening of a public event.
And I've also heard the term, hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, to open court sessions.
The hear ye started in, I think it was 1942. There was a town crier in New York. He was called Mr. Knickerbocker. He would greet the planes coming into Idlewild Airport with, oyay, oyay, oyay. Well, they wanted to put him in the movies, so Cecil D. DeMille said, okay, we're going to put you in the movie. Show me what you do. And he started with, oh, yeah. And they said, what does that mean? That means come here and listen. So Cecil D. DeMille said, okay, from now on you'll say, hear ye, and that's where it started.
And that was for a movie.
And the only other ones that use it are the Dutch, and they say it in their language rather than, oh, yeah.
Our topic this evening on Lehigh Valley Discourse is town criers. And we have two real live ones here in the studio, one from Easton, Pennsylvania, the other from Belvedere, New Jersey. And we're going to be back after this short break. Stay with us.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
Back on Lehigh Valley Discourse with our guests this evening, David Rose and Bill Joseph. I understand that, and we're talking about town criers, and here are two town criers right with us today. I understand that we do not think of using microphones when we're doing crying. Is that correct, David?
Well, the one of the criteria for being a town crier is that you use your own voice. The competitions are not mic'd, so if you were used to using a mic, you would be really at a disadvantage at a competition. There's no rule against a town crier using a mic. In fact, I think we're using one right now. the idea of being a town crier is that you want to be able to project your own voice. We take a certain amount of pride in being able to project our voice so that people can hear us. One of the big problems, however, though, is that there's so much background noise nowadays. We have so much, we have fountains in squares. We have, obviously, traffic is a problem. We don't realize how much noise there is a lot of times, and that makes it more difficult, actually, for a town crier to be heard using his own voice. And when we go and do an event, if we're asked to do an event, I know that I have to, a lot of time, check first to see if there's a possibility of reducing that noise by either asking people to turn off the fountain or something like that, because that really makes it much more difficult to be heard.
And you'd rather have them adjust the background noise than for them to tell you, well, just use a microphone.
Yes, as a rule. But if there is background noise, I am not going to just try and break my voice trying to go over it. Yeah, I will use the mic if that's necessary. But ideally, to just eliminate the background noise is something that I would like.
Bill, what's your story about Washington, D.C.?
My wife and I were asked to come down to help with the reading of the Declaration of Independence on the 4th of July in 2005. And when I got down there, I took the lay of the land and I said, my goodness, this is a big area to get my voice out. And a fellow approached me with a mic to put on my lapel and a pack to put on my belt. And I said, what's this for? He said, so we can hear you. I says, have no fear, you'll hear me. They had parabolic mics, those little scoop mics out in the audience, and I didn't know that either. But they go ahead and put this lapel mic on me, and they said, okay, give it a shot. And I just did one oh yeah, and he said, we got a good sound check. Okay, we're ready to go. When I did the real thing, by the time I did the third oh yeah, I had destroyed the mic. My voice carried across Pennsylvania Avenue and into the gardens on the other side, and people were standing up and turning and saying, what is that noise? So, but I have, on just recently in the town of Newton, I had a gathering of criers and a parade the day before, and there was people lined up on both sides of the street all the way down Spring Street in Newton. And I used the microphone only because the cry that I was reading had to be heard, I thought, by everybody, not the people within 100 yards. And they were strewed all down, and they had a loudspeaker and all that. So I did it with a microphone. But most of the time, it's done with sheer will and yelling from your toes.
And that's part of the charm of it. And it's, you say, in competitions, you're not going to have microphones.
Right.
And so part of it is how loudly you can project.
Right. Yeah. And how clearly, how evenly. It gets a little petty sometimes, but you get deductions if your voice breaks. So, and if most of the time, if people are shouting at the top of their lung, their voice is going to break. So we have to kind of treat our voice as a bit of an instrument, but we also have to treat it as a muscle. And we have to make sure that it's in shape. I learned when I was fairly in high school, I was singing for a long time in a district chorus competition, not a competition, but a district chorus event. And the whole following week, I couldn't speak because I was not in shape for singing loudly for a long period of time. And the same thing goes with town crying. If you're doing something like, and we have a limit on the number of words normally that we cry, which is around 125, because beyond that, you run the risk of breaking your voice.
In addition to that, it's your deportment, how you're dressed. You just couldn't stand up there in a town crier T-shirt and a ball cap that says town crier on it. You have to be dressed ready as a town crier in conjunction to where you're representing. For instance, I have both a 1890s top hat and tails, and I have two type colonial uniforms. The colonial uniforms are for the towns that date back into the 1700s, and the 1890s tuxedo is for Belvedere, which is a Victorian town. Now, if I go up there and I have my hat on backwards, or I happen to, you know, fondle my nose or pull up my ear, that's going to take you points off in deportment. So, and it's keeping to the script. If you do not follow the script, which most of the time you've written, then you're going to get deductions for that. In 2008, I went into the North American competition, and I lost the American division by 1 point because I did not say the.
Do you remember the phrase that needed the?
The United States of America.
And you said simply United States.
Yes.
We're kind of talking about competitions now and what competitions are judged on. And one of them is, and I didn't mention that, and Bill brought that up, though, is the exact wording of what you wrote. And there's a historical reason for that. And that was because town criers originally were supposed to read proclamations from the king. If you added your own words into it, or you deducted the royals, what the royal proclamation said, you were in trouble. Basically, that you were not supposed to do any sort of. Actually, there is one of the older guilds in England has competitions where you are supposed to read it in the way it was read back then, which was without any inflection whatsoever. Mm-hmm. We use inflection in ours to make our point across. But when you were reading a proclamation, you were just supposed to read the word as it was written without any of your own interpretation. So that's one of those interesting little historical tidbits that's kind of fun when you research the history of town crying.
Exactly. And
the town crying community is steeped in histories. Some of the words that we use nowadays, it comes from town crying. Like David mentioned, don't shoot the messenger. If David couldn't perform his duties and said, Bill, you only live 10 miles from me, can you come and do my cries? Certainly, I would be doing a far cry. Right? And the list goes on. A lot of the phrases that I'm trying to remember them, that the list goes on, and you'd say, well, okay, I use it for this, how come it's for that? So it's just a history in walking around, just history. And one other thing, and I'll shut up, is
the likely. No. The purpose of the interview is for you to keep going, Bill.
Okay. Since I was first appointed as a town crier, and up to date, I have met vice presidents, senators, congressmen, governors. I met the governor of Pennsylvania. Ed Randell, back in 1998, I think it was, and the list goes on. If I walk down the street in a Phillies T-shirt, which would never happen, Mets, go Mets.
Oh, okay. Anyway, he'd walk down in a Mets T-shirt.
A Mets T-shirt and a ball cap, they would say, you know, who's this guy? But I've been recognized in my hometown and in my counties where I've been in a T-shirt, ball cap that I have on, says Town Crier on it, and they'll say, aren't you the Town Crier of, and it's a way of, I still carry on that persona, even though that I'm wearing just a ball cap.
Right, mm-hmm. And actually, for our listeners' sake, to tell them that Bill is dressed in a T-shirt that says, I Heart Proclamations, and the ball cap. So, unfortunately, Bill, you didn't get dressed up for this interview.
No.
You realized it was radio.
Right.
Who cares? Right.
But I did shave.
Yes, you did. And David has on his sash that says Town Crier and says Easton on it also. And you have a medal. What's the medal about?
Also has the flag, the patch for the guild, and also has the patch, which is the Easton flag. What is the medal? This is basically the medal that you get as a guild member, and you can wear that for competitions and things like that.
And he's wearing it around his neck with a red, white, and blue
Right. That's the thing you get as an official member. Mentioning the Guild, though, we were talking a little bit about history and Guild. The American Guild functions like the old guilds of Europe, basically, which were to set standards and to control competition. The standards are set by the Guild for American competitions, which has what the criteria is and how it's judged. It obviously also has the procedure for election of officers. But the other thing it does is control competition. You have to be, in order to be a member of the Guild, recognized by a governmental authority, like I'm recognized by the city of Easton. That also means that another town crier cannot come into my area and perform as a town crier without my permission. Just like the old guild controlled competition, so does the American Guild, so that we don't step on each other's toes, that we all end up being friends, and that we are happy in our own. And also, in a sense, to point out where there are not town criers. Now, I could perform in Bethlehem, actually, if somebody invited me to perform in Bethlehem without asking anybody's permission, because there are no appointed town criers in Bethlehem.
What? This is unbelievable.
And we're looking for town criers.
Yes. Wow. Let's put in the plug right now, David.
So if somebody is interested in being a town crier, I know Bethlehem has a wonderful colonial history, and there are many people walking around Bethlehem right now who are already employed by the Bethlehem tourism agencies to talk about the history of Bethlehem. If any of them are interested in adding to their repertoire and becoming a town crier, they can just get on the website for the American Guild of Town Criers. And that would tell them who they can contact in order to be proclaimed as the town crier for Bethlehem and enjoy all the things that Bill and I have been talking about.
And what's the name of the website again?
They would just Google American Guild of Town Criers. And the website, Bill is the webmaster for that.
Yeah.
And he has all the information listed on there that they would need.
If I can just interject a few things. First, about being appointed as a town crier. You can also be appointed by a duly registered, it doesn't have to be the mayor or the council, could be the Friends of the Library, the Lions Club also.
Or the Bethlehem Historical Partnership could appoint somebody.
Right, but they have to be somebody that's recognized. They couldn't be the Beer Drinkers of America, although there are some criers you may think that are members. Also, if you look at the sash that I know you people out there can't read what he's got on there, but it does say town crier on it, but he has an array of pins on the sash. Now, I have a similar sash, and for 22 years, I've got 120 pins. He has about 25 pins on there, and those pins are from where he's gone. When the town criers gather, they all bring their pins. I have the county pins on my hat.
Now, these are small metallic pins.
Right.
And many people would collect them when they go traveling to places.
Well, the criers, they exchange pins. I see the Newton pin there, and I think the county pins are there from Morris and Sussex County.
Kingston and a number of other places.
Right,
so.
But that's a way of, so that when you meet a town crier at another competition, they can see, oh, you've gotten a pin, we've met before, my name, and so on. It shows a little bit of camaraderie.
When you do these competitions, does each crier have to have his own bell to ring? Is the bell a necessity?
The bell is a necessity, but I've seen in two competitions that a person, their bell broke, or it was in their luggage and their luggage hadn't arrived yet, where they borrowed someone else's bell. Now, to take that a little step further, if I may, each person's uniform that we spoke about before is different than the others, and so is their bell. Just like you have a call sign and you may have some music that you play in the foreground. If David was going to do the news in the middle of Easton, right at the square, at noon, he would arrive in his uniform ringing his bell.
Oh.
And the people would recognize that bell and come a-running, because after he's done, the only other way he's going to get the news is if David takes it and barnsides it and posts it on the square, so anybody else that could read would be able to read it to them.
I want to be just kind of expand a little bit on the idea of an attention-getting device, which is really what it's called. You're not told in the competitions to ring a bell. You're told to use your attention-getting device, and that can be a bell, but it's used to be, historically, it was a drum. It could be a trumpet. It could be anything. I have a conch shell because I'm working on trying to perfect that as an attention-getting device because of the history of Easton as a canal town. And that was used by the canal men to announce they're approaching a lock. And I think that would be kind of neat if I can do that. But the problem is, with wind instruments, it's really hard to have the sound come out right the first time. But I'm working on that. The other thing, however, though, that is used by towns is a small horn. In fact, the Dutch criers do not use a bell. They use a horn to start their cry off. And it's a fairly loud one. He carries it around on his neck, and he blows on that. So it can be anything that is loud enough to get people's attention. Really, though, because the town criers were historically called the bell men, most town criers do use a bell.
And attention-getting devices.
I have several different kinds.
It's time for us to take a break here on Lehigh Valley Discourse. We're talking about town crying with two town criers. And we'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
Contemporary town criers. You didn't even know they existed, did you? And here we have two with us in the studio today, David Rose and Bill Joseph. And they apparently have a lot of fun with their town crying.
Absolutely.
I just sensed that with the way your enthusiasm comes forth here. Question for you. Do you ever memorize your texts, or do you always read them?
I never memorize it. As a matter of fact, David can qualify that by, I was recently with the Bachman Players, where I played a part, and I had to literally write the script down, and every time I was to read one line, I had to read it off my hand or off a piece of paper.
Yeah. Being a town crier, you kind of get used to, and you're enforced, actually, to read exactly what you wrote. So yeah. Bill has not, basically, as a result of being a town crier, he's unable to memorize anything anymore.
And that goes back, pardon me, Dave, it goes back to my seventh year in grammar school, where I was, the nuns I was in parochial school, thought it was a good idea for me to play Lou Costello in the Who's on First?
You resemble Lou Costello.
Thank you.
A compliment?
Yeah, thank you. And they picked a tall, thin guy in the class, said, you're going to be Bud Abbott. So in order to do this, they tried to have me memorize the line. No way. What they did was, with chalk, wrote the lines down on the stage. So all I had to do was look down and read the lines. And I've been doing that ever since.
Well, that was before teleprompters came along.
That explains why I always see you looking at the floor. You're looking for your lines. Okay.
But memorize? No. There's no way you could, because I would think that a very, like 99% of the cries that you're going to read, you've either gotten the information and rewritten it, or you've wrote it yourself. So all you have to do is miss one line, and you've lost the context. So rather than memorize it, I read it right from my words. And there's times when I've gotten into a situation where I've missed a word, and I'm reading it, and I'll say, I can't even read my own writing, all right, out to the audience. So.
And the other thing is that part of the performance is the idea of reading. And most of us have scrolls, which I have here and I'm showing you, that have some identification on it of what we're representing.
Right.
My scroll here has the seal of the city of Easton. And then basically I use that scroll then to hold the speech that I've written and insert it in there. And so it is part of the performance, actually, to read what you're doing. But you're not just reading from a sheet of paper. Usually you're reading from sort of a scroll, which is one of the props that you use.
Which is more attractive, right?
Right. Yes.
What about women as criers? Is that permitted?
Well, there are women criers. We have, I think that at one time there were 3 town criers in the guild that were women. Right now it's down to 1. The 2 of them married and decided not to be in the guild anymore. But there are women town criers all over the world.
Does that go way back in history, or was it a man's
profession? Well, a lot of times it would have been a family affair, kind of. The woman would help the man, and there are a number of recorded when the man was incapacitated or died, basically the role passed on to the woman. And if you've attended some of the competitions, it's really surprising to hear a woman who is speaking as loud as a town crier as the men town criers. They do have a voice that carries, not necessarily the same way, but it certainly carries.
And we heard the volume that you used at the beginning of the program, and we're going to hear Bill's at the end.
Yeah. Right. Now, there is a role for women in competition who aren't town criers. There's also a role for men in competitions who aren't town criers if they're spouses or escorts or consorts, as we call them, of the person doing the cry. And in competitions, they are judged for their dress, how appropriate it is, whether it says something about their community they're from, what the quality of the sewing is, how complete the uniform is, or the costume is, or whatever you want to call it. So there is a role for both for couples in these events. Usually, when you go to an event, though, and you're both dressed in some historical attire, it really draws attention from the people on the street, and you're constantly stopped for taking photos. When I married my wife, I didn't think as we became older, we'd become more photogenic, but that apparently is the case as we go around this town criers, because more and more people want to take our pictures.
Your attention-getting device is your outfit.
That's one of those things.
It does, but as Dave was saying about your attention-getting device, I have several. I have a collection of bells that go from one that you could hear a mile away to something that you would use in a dinner theater. I also have what's called a clacker. It's something that school marms used back in the 1700s to get the kids back in from recess. In my, looking for history of town criers, I've heard that they've used guns, drums, horns, castanets, a string of horse bells like Santa Claus would have. And the list goes on. As long as you can attract the people to where you want them so you don't have to yell a quarter mile, then you've done your job.
David, how did you get started as a town crier?
Well, I got started through being involved with the Easton Heritage Day, which is the celebration of the reading of the Declaration. I was one of the people who was selected to do the reading. And that's where I got started in the idea of using my voice to project and play a historical role. I was asked a number of times, since people knew me as doing that, to perform as a town crier. And when I was doing that, one of the persons who was a town crier called up and says, hey, since you're going around as a town crier, maybe you really ought to become one. And so I realized that there was a guild of these people, and I applied and was told I had to get appointed, and eventually I got appointed and joined. So that's how I am an official town crier, whereas before I was just playing one.
And how many years have you been crying?
I've only been doing this for about 3 years. But I was performing as a reader prior to that, I was doing public speaking.
Do you have a theatrical background or interest in and have been in plays before? Or?
Most of the town criers have some sort of theatrical or vocal background, sometimes a combination of both. I've always prided myself on having a loud voice. I was in county and district chorus and in the glee club through high school and college. So I can say that I have some sort of a musical background, and I've performed in local theater groups. One of the interesting things when you meet some of the other town criers, some of the ones who are actually the world champions, they tend to have a background in opera, because when you get the vocal training that opera requires, right, and you end up with the theatrical background that opera gives you, you're perfectly suited to spend the rest of your life as a town crier.
Wow. And Bill, how did you get going in this town crying thing?
Well, it was 1992, and our town was having a day-long carnival, and they wanted to give away prizes, and that was my job, to get the prizes. And then when they realized I had so many to give away, they thought it was a good idea to dress me up as a town crier in the uniform I still wear today and walk down Main Street, ringing the bell, attracting attention, and then during the day, I would read numbers off of 50-50 tickets that everybody got. So the short of it was, they thought it was a good idea, so they appointed me their town crier in Mount Arlington, New Jersey, in 1992. From there, I proceeded on to the county criorships in Morris County, and then Sussex County, and then Newton, and it just went on from there. So the 22 years I've, and then we have our own website, which my three OYAs are on the website. So it's something that a dream that started as when I was doing the Who's On First in the seventh grade and a couple of other plays in high school. And it went on to be theatrics, which I enjoy.
So you, there has to be a lot of inhibition in your personality.
No. It would be the exact opposite. One of the wonderful things about getting together with other town criers is that everyone is an extrovert. Everybody wants to be the center of the party, the life of the party. And when you get a whole bunch of people together who want to be the life of the party, you end up having a party.
That's it.
pretty much. Everybody has a story to tell. Everybody has the latest joke. No, if you want to be a town crier and you consider yourself an introvert, you're probably not in the right field.
Is it, speaking of jokes and humor, are the cries ever humorous?
Oh, definitely.
Are they what you would call jokes?
Well, I had one just about a month ago where I had to entertain the Municipal Utilities Alliance in Morris County, and their theme was coffee. And I started out holding an empty cup of coffee and went through the names of the coffee and the coffee beans. And in the middle of it, I read, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't remember, I'll have a latte with two squirts, extra foam, sprinkles, and whipped. And when I got done with that, I says, and I have no idea what I just said.
That's good. And that was what occasion?
It was for the awards dinner for recycling for the MUA in Morris County.
Yeah. How many times a year would there be invitations to you personally to cry?
Well, it depends on where you're at. Starting with England, which has the strongest tradition, most town criers, in England, there's competitions each week. If you were a town crier, you could go around England, and every week there would be a place you could go to meet other town criers and compete against them. Canada comes next from our experience, where they have a number of festivals, one at least a month,
right,
during the spring and summer months. Here in North America, we're much more spread out, or I should say in the United States, we're much more spread out. And if we do go, probably at least half of our town crying events are actually going to Canada and participating in their events, because we just don't have the same density of town criers to be actually support an event. It's not the Canadian town criers. In their case, it's the Ontario Guild, and then there's also the Nova Scotia Guild.
Also the Town Criers Guild of the Northwest Canada.
Northwest Canada,
but
so.
In personally, I know David's got a gig, as we call them, this afternoon. I just finished one yesterday And there's another one coming up for me a week from now where it's an anniversary. I have a wedding to do mid-July where you have David's got an event in Easton on the 12th and 13th,
right.
And the beat goes on. When I retired from Landing, New Jersey, and moved to Belvedere, New Jersey, I tried to stay in this area because from all year round, I never know when I'm going to get a phone call coming with your bell. But my biggest business, so to speak, is in September, October, November, where I'll do festivals. This is when people want to, they have the Harvest Festival, they have the Corn Festival, and I come with my bell, and they pay me a stipend to yell at everybody.
Well, and I've done the Garlic Festival in Easton, which is also in the fall. Bill mentioned the upcoming in July. We do have Heritage Day. We have a gathering of around six criers that'll be coming, performing on Heritage Day prior to the reading at noon. So we'll be doing our criers around 11. The day prior to that, on July the 12th, we will be performing on Main Street here in Bethlehem with the Historical Bethlehem Partnership, crying about events that happened during the Revolutionary War when Bethlehem was the location of the Continental Army Hospital.
And when you have these half dozen criers coming into Easton, you have to give them permission to cry there. Is that correct?
No, that's
it's by invitation. They're bringing their theme cry. They're bringing the cry about where they are. They're expected to bring this stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a timing, a list of criers in their performance. So if you have six criers, they go one through six, and then you jumble them up for the second cry. But there's a list of criers, and they have to perform. And whoever at the end, if there's a competition, wins an award.
And they are representing their community when
right.
they come in.
Right.
They're not doing something where they would be representing your community, which is the reason why there is the restriction against outside criers coming
right.
in, because you're the one that's supposed to be representing your community.
Right. Now, when you go to these competitions and you are judged, how many judges are there?
Five.
There are always five.
No, right. it's not. Well, in some cases, there are
North American and the world, there's five.
Yeah.
One for the loudness. You could start out your oyes as loud as you want, but as long as the speech that you're reading stays at the same level, you can't say "we" and then go down. It stays at the same level throughout the cry.
So one judge is judging only that.
And in most times, that judge will turn his back on you so he can hear you, okay? Yeah. And won't see the theatrics. The next one is deportment, and that's how you carry yourself going up to the stage and down and while you're up there. The third is the cry itself. Does it match the theme of what's happening? The fourth one is diction, which means did you before the competition, you have a copy of your cry, which I showed you before. Another copy goes to the judges, and each judge has a copy of that. Now, they're going it word for word. I lost the competition by one word
right.
Because I didn't say
that. And that was one point that was taken off.
And that's all it needed.
Out of how many points?
236. I had 235.
And that's painful.
But you're there for the fun for the most part.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I mean, it's not like the World Soccer Cup.
I have traveled.
It's not that painful.
No, it's not that painful. It's not like the loss
I have traveled to Winnipeg for a competition, the 1998 North American. And when I got there, I was first. It's Canada, you know, and it's different. We're up above the no darkness line and the whole works, right? And now I'm trying to do my thing when someone from Canada comes to me and says, "I can't talk." Yeah. I gave him something that I use to help my throat, and he beat me.
We've
been best friends and good friends ever since. But that's and the other way around was there was a. It was a person that came from Los Angeles and brought with him someone from the L.A. Times, so that however he came out, they could send it back to the L.A. Times and say how he answered.
One of the things that we were talking about going to Canada, one of the things you'll notice when you go to Canada is that the way that the cries are structured is fairly obvious, especially in Canada, because they all end their cries with "God Save the Queen." Mm-hmm. We don't have necessarily the same rule here. We don't have a salutation. Depending on the historical period, I may end my cry with something that says, like, "God Save the Union," because I'm doing it usually sometimes around the area of the Civil War. If I'm doing it around the Revolutionary War, I will use something that ties into the reading of the Declaration, something they use there. But there is the opening, which is the OEA. There's the content of the cry itself, which is written according to each person's individual phrasing and the kind of research they've done. And then there's usually a traditional ending too, which kind of signifies the end of the cry. And that varies depending on the area the person is from.
David Rose and Bill Joseph, our time is up.
Thank you for the opportunity.
This has been great. It's been a fun hour.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, you town criers, for coming in here. And Bill is going to take us out now with a cry that he has developed.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay! Oh, yay! My lords, my ladies, I am the Morris County and Sussex County Crier and the town crier of Belvedere from New Jersey. I am here present as an ambassador from our town to yours. With the ringing of a bell and a loud, clear voice, I only bring good news. For the words you will hear may bring to you a smile. I will tell tales of where I'm from and where I have traveled, showing each listener the true nature of a modern town crier. I enjoy telling stories to entertain. I love adding grandeur to the mundane, to liven up spirits with a historical flair. So if you meet a town crier in your travels, be mindful that he or she are carrying on a tradition that is hundreds of years old. Why not tarry a while and give a listen? Thank you for your ear.
Thank you so much.
This
is Lehigh Valley Discourse. Remember to be gentle with your neighbor.